Welcome to Inside the Newsroom, the Sentinel Records weekly podcast from the Razorback Campers Health Studio that takes a closer look at news and sports in Garland County. A former professor at National Park College recently released a new book about the murder of a man by Garland County Sheriff's deputies in 1910. The murder of Oscar Chitwood in Hot Springs, Arkansas, was written by former NPC history professor Dr. Christopher Thrasher and Encyclopedia of Arkansas editor Dr. Guy Lancaster, and it was released October 31st. The book details the events leading to the death of Garland County Sheriff Jake Hout and George Chitwood in an August 17, 1910 shootout between sheriff's deputies and brothers George and Oscar Chitwood. Oscar Chitwood was later arrested and charged with the murder of Sheriff Hout, and he was killed on December 26, 1910, while being transported in the middle of the night to another jail. While initial reports said Chitwood was lynched by a mob, the two deputies transporting him were later charged with his murder, but were never convicted. Dr. Thrasher and Dr. Lancaster are with us today to discuss their new book and the work that went into researching the topic.
To start with, Christopher, from what Guy was telling me, it seems like you were the one who kind of got this entire project started.
So what happened was, is I recall the history of this, is a guy had a really good idea for a book. He was familiar with several stories of some interesting things and some tragic things that had happened in Hot Springs, and was looking for somebody to kind of help him out. Particularly, I was in Hot Springs at the time, and he's in Little Rock. And somebody that maybe could do some local research and maybe focus a little on the specifics of one of those stories. I think that's probably fair. Guy did the big picture work. He's really an expert, as I'm sure you know, on lynching and extra legal violence and something. And then to dig into the archives at the Garland County Historical Society, which is a phenomenal resource, and places like that, and talk a little bit about Chitwood specifically. So yeah, that's probably a fair statement.
Yeah. Where did the idea for the book come from to begin with? The Oscar Chitwood side of the story anyway.
Well, I had this idea that we'd put Oscar Chitwood kind of in context with two lynchings that happened in Hot Springs. So that's the book we originally prepared for a different publisher. And, you know, they sent it out for peer review, and the peer reviewers asked for some more context. So we wrote some additional chapters that related to some executions that had occurred in Hot Springs, the killing of a federal employee in Hot Springs, and submitted that to them to add context more, you know, make it less about vigilante violence and more about kind of terror in general in Hot Springs. And then the reviews for that one came back and they said, there's way too much context. This book is all over the place. You know, so it was like, ah. And then, you know, we didn't know if we were just going to give up. And Christopher said, what if we just focus on one of these? And, you know, the Chitwood story hadn't really been approached all that much. You know, there's a lot on, you know, lynching in general, but the Chitwood case is unique in that it was, you know, police acting like vigilantes. It was reported as a lynching, then discovered it wasn't. There was actually a trial. You know, there's just all sorts of good meat for analysis here. So we pared everything else off, you know, spun some of the extra work we'd done into some articles for the record, the publication of the Garland County Historical Society. And I believe one of them's coming out this year. But so, you know, it was a really good idea just to focus on Chitwood. We'd gotten a little too expansive, you know, at the urging of reviewers. And so just sort of pared it down, focused on Chitwood, and, you know, tried to make a more readable, more, you know, digestible story.
Sure. You know, for a book that is focused on Oscar Chitwood, there was a lot of background research that went into this. I mean, you went back 1700s, 1600s. I can't remember how far back, but, you know, you went in depth about, you know, the history of Hot Springs, where the, you know, how it grew into what it became, and then went into the history of lynching in the city. You know, I know that you do the Encyclopedia of Arkansas, you do a lot of this history type stuff. You know, where did, you know, why did you decide to go back that far before you, you know, got into the meat of the story?
Well, I think some of it is just, you know, reaching out for a broader audience like this. You want to give some background on what Hot Springs is. And Hot Springs has, you know, such a crazy, delightful history, you know, that really helped set the stage, you know. But also, you know, one point I think it's important to make is that this sort of violence, this sort of vigilantism occurs in places that are corrupt. You know, you corrupt societies breed, you know, this kind of violence. And, you know, Hot Springs has a very corrupt history. You know, so I think emphasizing that really helps set the stage, not just for the events themselves, but more thematically, you know, for the creation of the context that allowed for this to take place.
Tell me a little bit, Christopher, tell me a little bit about, you know, the research, you know, just looking through it, you know, reading over the book, you know, there's a lot that went into it. I know that there were 5 or 6 different newspapers you know, y'all ended up going through, getting information about this, you know, here in the state. I know there were also several that were, you know, I think I remember one in Montana, one in Washington. You know, how difficult was it to compile all this information on Christopher Chitwood, or on Oscar Chitwood?
Well, it's not difficult if you enjoy it. And I'm a history guy, and I love digging through archives, and I love looking at things that other people haven't seen. So kind of the way it started is I went to the Garland County Historical Society, and I went and I spoke with Liz Robbins, and I'll just, you know, encourage anybody, if you're interested in the Hot Springs, in the history of Hot Springs, the history of Garland County, you need to go down there. That needs to be your first stop. And then once I talked to her and she gave me a lot of that, a lot of it is only there because she was able to steer me in the right direction. Certainly looking at newspapers, and that's easier and easier to do because so many of those have become digitized now. So it used to be, you know, back in the olden days, you had to go through the microfilm and all that. Now, most of that's available online, which is wonderful. Even if you have to go to an archive, they have it digitally, which makes it much easier. The thing that I found that I got the biggest kick out of it is there have been trials, as Guy mentioned, more than one court case, and courts leave records. And nobody, to the best of my knowledge, had ever looked at any of the court records for any of this stuff. And so I was asking around town, and, you know, I felt like I was playing Sherlock Holmes, trying to figure out, okay, where would these be if they existed? And I finally went to the old Garland County courthouse, hoping that they might have something. And the clerk was very helpful and said, well, we have a basement that may have some old stuff in it if you want to take a look. And so she led me through this labyrinth of the courthouse. And then I walked down this rickety metal spiral staircase into what felt like a dungeon. And it was like shaking as I stepped on it. And I was afraid I was going to fall and break my neck. Thankfully, I did it. And then I go into this and I get down into the basement. And there is just wall to wall, just jam packed with all these old court records, 100-plus-year-old court records that I think have really just been ignored for the most part. They kind of just got stuck down there. And it was a bit of an adventure down there with my flashlight and my cell phone trying to find what I was looking for. But eventually I came across, I think, most of the records we were looking for. And then even the records themselves were just really great to work with, you know, in a physical and a tactile way, because there had been a fire at the Garland County Courthouse after all this happened. And so in some cases, even touching records that had kind of singe marks around the edges where they clearly had pulled them out just in time. So that for me was probably the most fun part, is going there. And I'm pretty confident most of those records I looked at, nobody had touched them since they were put aside, that they did the trial and they put it in a box and then it got shoved in this basement. So looking at those records was really, really phenomenal. I really enjoyed that a lot.
What was the most surprising thing that, you know, y'all learned during this entire process?
I'll let you go, Guy. You give your most surprising thing and I'll give mine. How about that?
I don't know. It's hard, you know, it at some point, it's hard to be surprised by Hot Springs history because you just keep being surprised by it. You know, it's things, you know, sometimes astonish you by their brutality and then astonish you by their humanity at the same time. You know, just looking at the case of Oscar Chitwood, it's surprising to me that these deputies decided to carry out this midnight assassination, you know, when they knew they had him. You know, they could have easily just had the trial and execution. You know, there was no need for this elaborate charade. And then it's also surprising that despite the fact Chitwood had been charged, you know, in the murder of a very popular sheriff, and there was immense feeling against him, there was kind of a rallying for the Chitwood family, you know, after this assassination, and tremendous feeling against the deputies, you know, who were involved, that the story spins so many different ways. You know, that's kind of what I found most interesting.
Yeah, and I agree with everything Guy said. I'll add something to it. So I'm a college professor. I teach American history and American national government. And one of the things that I found most shocking was there's a great newspaper article about, you know, there's none that would even dignify it by calling it a lynching. And I come out of this context of, well, lynching is a terrible thing. Lynching is bad. You shouldn't do that. Vigilante justice is terrible. That's not the right way to do it. And the fact that in this time and place, a lynching actually was seen by many people as being a good thing. This is a way to deal with a problem. And so that's something I very much have taken into my classes when I'm talking about constitutional rights. And I talk about, you know, there's this alternative perspective that, you know, the community knows this person's guilty. You know, we don't need to bother ourselves with a trial. The men of the community need to come together in their righteous indignation, and they need to eliminate the threat. And while I absolutely abhor that idea, it was really interesting to kind of see the logic from their perspective. And it's something I feel like I see even today played out to some degree. I'm sure we can all think of recent court cases, whether it's the guy that ran through the parade or the school shooter that was just sentenced to life in prison and not death. And I've heard a lot of comments on social media when those things first happened, and even since the trial, because in both cases, those two, they're not going to get the death penalty, of people saying somebody just needs to break in the jail and just kill them and just be done with it. So the idea that thread, that kind of old style anger of we're just going to take matters under our own hands still exists. That was the thing that most surprised me. I think that's the first time in all my study where it's really clicked that was a popular idea, an idea that, once again, I reject, but does have some level of internal logic to it. I think I get the thought process. So that was the most surprising thing and the most illuminating thing to me in the whole study.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, I was kind of surprised, you know, to see that some of these newspapers, you know, actually did, you know, say that, you know, this wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Well, lynching is not always a bad thing. You know, in general, you know, there's some issues, but, you know, it was surprising to see that.
Inside the Newsroom is sponsored by Reiser Ford and Lincoln. On the hunt for a new truck or car, stop by 4201 Central Avenue in Hot Springs today or call 501-525-0800 today for all your truck and car needs.
You know, when you started this project, was the plan to connect it to Charlottesville, to the Black Lives Matter, you know, all of that? Or was that something that, as it wrapped up and the way that it came together, it just ended up folding in together well?
I think it ended up folding together well because we really, you know, I'd done some initial work on this, but we really started working together in 2020. You know, so it was height of the pandemic, but then also, you know, George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd happened that year. So, you know, I mean, even if we were doing it unconsciously, we couldn't help being influenced by the fact that here's a guy murdered by police officers, and we're dealing with a case of another person murdered by police officers. And in both cases, the public sort of rallied toward the victim. You know, the parallels suggested themselves, I'd say.
I noticed that there was a little bit of editorialization, you know, regarding the Rutherford case. I don't know if that was intentional or it was just trying to express what it seemed to, what from transcripts and the like seemed to express. But it seemed like, it seemed like there was a, like you were trying to tell that, you know, that justice wasn't necessarily served in this case. And obviously it wasn't, because, you know, these two men, you know, whether they pulled the trigger or not, were clearly involved in Oscar Chitwood's death. But, you know, was that an intentional thing, or was that just something that had kind of come together due to transcripts and court records and the like?
that's a good question. I agree. You're absolutely right. Justice clearly was not done, because under the Constitution, this is not how we deal with people, even people who've committed the most horrific crimes. And I think that was one of the things I wrote in there, that, you know, Oscar Chitwood was probably a criminal. I think he probably was a thief. He had probably been in jail before. He probably would have gone to jail again for something else. I don't know exactly what his level of legal liability was. Certainly, he was adamant that he didn't shoot anybody, that he was not responsible for a murder. I suspect that's part of why the deputies may have done what they did, is because there was a concern that, because as Guy pointed out, there was some rallying of support for Chitwood and some questions about some pretty corrupt authorities. I think there's a good chance that he might have been acquitted, at least of murder. He may have gone to jail for other things. So I think anytime you have somebody who doesn't get his day in court, and that was his, according to one witness, was his plea at the end is, you know, let me stand trial. And I think it's very important that everybody, no matter what they've done, gets their day in court and gets their constitutional protections. So, I definitely agree that justice was not done and this was not the right way to handle it. But yeah, there's a lot we don't know. We know what the transcripts say. We kind of know a lot about court documents, but exactly who did what and why they did it and what their motives were, we don't know. So I think it's hard in a case like this, at least for me, to not have an opinion, even if I try to be somewhat fair and to acknowledge the limits. I've got an opinion, and if somebody reads it and they disagree, that's certainly fine. The one thing that I would be very adamant about is that justice was not done and that this was tragic, regardless.
Well, and I think we were, you know, the trial testimony,
yeah,
you know, was pretty overwhelmingly against Rutherford. When the governor goes to the extent of, you know, giving, what was it, Christopher, allow, you know, the other prisoners were afraid to testify about what they'd seen. So, you know,
yeah,
offered them clemency in exchange, mm-hmm, for their testimony. I mean, and these prisoners are often, many of them were African Americans testifying about, you know, these white cops murdering, you know, one of their white prisoners, and just a pretty astounding convergence of events here that very much speak to not only Rutherford's, you know, guilt, but sort of a sense that everyone's kind of aware of it too.
You know, I know that you said that there was, you know, y'all couldn't find any information on Ben Murray, you know, his trial. Was charges just eventually dropped on him, or did just nothing ever happen and he was just eventually released? Or do you know?
I dug through the Garland County courthouse records and I could not find anything that suggested he ever faced any kind of punishment or penalty. So that can mean several things. That could mean that something happened and it wasn't documented or wasn't preserved, not even for a nefarious reason, just things get lost and misplaced and burned and all the rest. So it could be something happened. We just don't have a surviving record of it. I think what's more likely is they went after Rutherford. They couldn't get Rutherford. And then they just dropped it because they said, well, if we can't get Rutherford, and I think the evidence was stronger against him, then we're probably not going to get anybody else, and it's just time to move on. But that's an educated guess. Certainly, guys, free to express an opinion on that too. But
I mean, we didn't find any evidence that he ever went to trial through, you know, newspaper records or anything, and you know that's frustrating, you know, because they don't always report that the decision not to go to trial. It just mm-hmm. sort of disappears from the records.
Right. So what was the overall hope for this project? If there was one beyond just telling the story of Oscar Chitwood.
Well, for my part, you know, what I would hope comes from this is we, you know, especially in the present moment when we're looking at matters of police brutality, police violence, you know, we need to expand our horizons on that a little bit. You know, this is a white country boy, you know, who gets murdered by cops. Mm-hmm. It complicates our picture of that. You know, I think it should also complicate our picture of lynching too. There's a chapter that, you know, says, okay, Oscar Chitwood wasn't lynched, but he was a perfect candidate for it because there were people who, you know, throughout Arkansas, throughout the nation, other, you know, white men like him who had been lynched for stealing horses, for murdering, you know, police officers and the like. You know, our view of lynching now is sort of that of an exclusively racialized phenomenon. But in Arkansas, you know, 25% to 33% of the lynching victims were white. And so I think we need to complicate that picture too and look at how class plays a role, you know, being on social margins and whatnot. So kind of hoping to complicate our pictures of all those things, but also really just tell a good story, because the story of Oscar Chitwood's a really good story.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll agree with that. Of course, guys, absolutely correct. And I think telling the story of the, you know, white working class people kind of on the margins and the struggle that they face, and it's not just a black and white issue, double entendre intended, that is way more complicated. Another thing, other than telling a good story that I was hoping to accomplish, as I hope comes out of this, is I was teaching in Hot Springs when I was doing the research and all this. And I talked to students about kind of local lore, and there's all these local legends about, you know, Al Capone and Odie Madden. And I think the picture that a lot of people have in the community is that organized crime, particularly in Hot Springs, or crime in Hot Springs, was all about these flashy gangsters and their, you know, their expensive suits, and they're the kind of gentleman gangsters and this idea, and very, very classy and very, you know, very fashionable. And I think what the story of Oscar Chitwood shows, it helps us understand that the real history of crime and the real history of crime, and even in a place like Hot Springs, it's not the story of Al Capone. It's not the story of those gangsters you've heard about. It is something far more kind of gritty and messy and confusing. And then I really enjoyed, too, thinking about this in terms of kind of competing visions of Southern manhood. And so you have kind of this very clean cut, you know, sheriff's department. They all go to the right church. They're members of the Masonic Lodge. They're kind of portraying themselves as these good men, and may have been in some ways, but clearly are involved in some corruption and some nefarious things. And then you have this, you know, model of masculinity where these guys are modeling themselves after Wild West heroes, and they want to look like cowboys. And they, at first glance, may kind of appear the bad guys, but they're pretty adamant that they were the good guys in this, or at least Oscar Chitwood was adamant that he was. And there's a quote in there at one point: "I was not a desperado. I was not a bad man. I'm just kind of a guy on the fringes trying to make my way." So those kind of competing messy images where it's not clear who the good guys and the bad guys are, I really like that part of the story, and I didn't expect to find it. It was just something that kind of came out along the way.
Yeah. Were either of you surprised to find out about the fact that the Halps were involved in, whether you want to call it crime, nefarious activities, not quite, you know, true straight arrow, you know, law enforcement? Were you surprised to find out that things weren't always on the up and up with that family?
And Hot Springs? Oh, send me to the fainting couch.
I wasn't surprised a bit. I felt like that was one of the first things I learned when I came to Hot Springs and exploring local history was immediately getting stories of kind of local corruption and stories of local corruption that existed up until the 1960s when illegal gambling was largely shut down. And even talking to some of the old timers that could even remember some of the corruption. And yeah, I was not surprised.
Yeah, I remember Garrison Keillor once talking about Kentucky as this, bastion of Bible-centered conservatism whose entire economy is predicated upon horse racing and bourbon. And in some ways, Hot Springs is very similar to that. That gambling always been big there. Moonshining in the 20s, moonshining is huge around there, yet also gave rise to, the Assemblies of God, and has this very conservative streak. It's in some ways kind of a miniature Kentucky here in the hills of Arkansas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that still very much continues and once again kind of goes to that duality of Southern culture that there in Hot Springs, you have these large churches, expounding these traditional values. But you can walk out the door of one of these large, well-attended churches, and go to a medical marijuana dispensary or a gentleman's club, if you want to use that term. And there's still things have changed over the years, but there's still that duality there in a lot of places, but I feel like particularly it's very strong in Hot Springs for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you did point out that, it started with crime and everything, and the hints of law enforcement around it, and moving into, the medical cannabis, the continued horse racing, and the fact that the churches are right there. Right next door in some cases, obviously this was, at least if I remember correctly, this was y'all's first time to work together. Do you have any plans going forward, maybe doing something else, either on Hot Springs or any projects in at all going forward?
We do have a paper on executions in Hot Springs coming out in the Record. I'd like to work again. It's I'm taking a break from big projects right now. I've had some pile up, so I'm just doing some smaller things right now. But I feel like Hot Springs has just so much potential. It would definitely be worth it to revisit it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be happy to do more on Hot Springs, even though I'm in North Carolina now. I've moved on to another job, but Hot Springs is certainly a place that I have a very warm spot in my heart for. It's funny when I came to Hot Springs, I came there for a job and didn't really know much about it. But I remember walking down Bathhouse Row and seeing those bathhouses and chatting with rangers, and I said to myself, there's a book here. There's a I'm gonna write something about this. I just felt confident, and I'm glad that I was able to do this with Lancaster. This has been a wonderful experience. I'm happy to work with Guy again, of course. Happy to do another one if he wants to. I feel like as wonderful as this book is, I feel like I haven't written the story I want to tell about Hot Springs yet. So I'm not sure when I'll get around to it. I've actually got a book coming out next year. It's a Civil War book, so I've had other things working on, but yeah, I think I'll go back to Hot Springs, and if it works out, the guy and I can, can tag team and do it again. That's wonderful. If it ends up where we kind of do our own takes, that's great too. And guys, absolutely right. There is lots and lots to write about the history of Hot Springs. There is fertile ground there for anybody who wants to go in and do the work and tell wonderful stories.
All right, great. Well, I appreciate you guys taking some time to talk to me today.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thank you.
This has been an episode of Inside the Newsroom from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. New episodes are released every Sunday. Thank you for listening.